Hi, this is Nathan East, hanging with the Teddy Bear on LOTL Radio, the Snow Radio.
Brother McClary, how are you doing this afternoon? Oh, I'm awesome. Doing really good. How are you doing there, Brother Teddy Bear himself? The man.
Man, I'm beautiful. I'm doing beautiful, man. We both have a lot less hair, but it's all right. We still here. We still
here. Hello. Well, you know, I want to just thank you, man, right up front for all that you have done and, you know, contributing to our success over the years and, you know, playing our music and just, you know, enlightening the fans with all your great wisdom as you share, you know, your gift with everybody, man. You are a legend.
Oh, man, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know what? We have a lot to talk about. We're both 21, man, but I just want to kind of hop back in the time machine just a little bit and go back to Tuskegee University, where it began.
Yes, sir.
Man, I had an opportunity to read the book actually about 4 days ago, and it is amazing, the trilogy. Putting all your life experiences, things that you had to go through and overcome, especially a lot of people don't realize, because during that time when the Commodores came to fruition, you were right as far as the whole civil rights movement and everything, and music epitomized everything that was during that time. And I wanted you to speak to the listeners for you, where you were there, you experienced all this. How gratifying or how spiritually awakening was it for you to be able to share this with so many of the listeners who love you and love the Commodores?
Well, I tell you, it was really a delightful thing for me to be able to share and to let them sort of take a look inside what I was experiencing at that time. I mean, it was a formidable time during the height of the civil rights movement, and of course, I was a fan of Dr. King and Jackie Robinson, and their philosophy was, of course, you know, love, and we were nonviolent. But at that particular time, there was a high school that was very close to my home, and I was catching the bus to go on the other side of town to my old black school. And I said to my parents, you know what, I'm going to go to this school the following year. And so they supported me. And, of course, that was a watershed moment for me because it enlightened me and it gave me the strength that I needed to actually deal with the record industry. And, of course, having bricks and oranges thrown at you as you walk to school and your sweater being burnt literally while you were wearing it, and to have racial slurs chanted at you, and get in the locker room, of course, and you want to play sports because I played sports at the black school, and to have no one wanting to take a shower after you take a shower, you know. But, you know, the beautiful thing about all of that was, despite all that was thrown at me, I was still, by the grace of God, I was able to still love and to show love. And when you have passion and purpose that you're driven by, you can persevere and you'll be amazed at, you know, by the grace of God, how much you can do. And I look back at it now, and even at the class reunion I attended recently, some of my white students, classmates, brought their kids and their parents even to get my autograph and to hear and to shake my hand. And, you know, what was amazing, they were bragging about, they went to school with me, and the experiences, you know, that I had to kind of turn this story around a little bit because I obviously didn't want to embarrass them in front of their children and their parents. But it's all in love, and, you know, we were fortunate having gone through that in high school. I came to Tuskegee my freshman year, only to have to deal with George Wallace and some of the things that was happening in Alabama. So, you know, Samuel Young had just gotten killed for going into an all-white bathroom. And so the students, obviously, were upset about that. And so we decided we were going to do a peaceful march. And, of course, Tom Joyner was a year ahead of me, and he was one of the students that was marching with us. And as we came downtown near the radio station there, the radio station owner thought that we were going to try to destroy the station or something, you know, so he was kind of concerned. So he came out and said, you know, what can I do? I mean, I don't want you guys to burn down my station. You know, no, we're not trying to burn down your station. But Tom told him, look, just let us go on the radio and talk about why we're marching and to raise awareness to the situation. And in fact, that was Tom's doing it the first time going on the radio. And it was riveting times. You know, we were, of course, you had several leaders at that time nationally, other than Dr. King. Of course, you had Malcolm X, you had Ralph Brown. And it was just Mago Edwards, you know, a lot of leaders that were persevering and saying enough is enough. You know, we are here in one nation under God, and we need to have a more precise way of a humane way of dealing with each other. And so, you know, sometimes you look at life and you look at the circumstances, and my grandmother used to say, looks like the more you think things change, the more they're similar, and some of the same things that Black Lives Matters and some of the organizations are dealing with now, you know. But we have to always remember that Jesus is love, and as we talked about it in our songs and in Zoom and some of the songs that have sweet.
There we go. We're back, family. My apologies. We had a major power surge here in downtown Houston, but we are live. Let's see if we can get Thomas back on. Thomas, are you here?
Oh, yes.
There we go.
Yes, sir.
There we go.
I'm sorry about that.
No, that was mine. We had a major power surge here in downtown, typical Houston, but it's okay. We're back. We got you.
Oh, yes.
It's all that matters.
Yes,
but, you
sir.
Know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because for me, like I said, we're both 21. And I'm just getting
yes,
personal experience. What bothers me more than anything else is that when I see groups like yourself who lay the blueprint, a foundation on substance, principle, musicianship, songwriting, performances, why is it so difficult or why is it so challenging to keep that core together? I mean, I can understand that if each individual wanted to go off and do their own solo project. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the bread and gravy, the potatoes and
that's
gravy,
right.
the mustard and
that's
chips,
right.
it's home front. It's the brand. It's the Commodore.
That's right.
Why is it
that's
so
that's
difficult?
Right.
Why is that so challenging to keep that together?
Well, you know, it's even more disturbing as far as you know, the fellow blacks, and who, you know, as a race, we have gone through the struggles together, and fighting social and economics and everything together. There should be a bond there that supersedes anything, you know. And I have found it very disturbing that educated brothers, you know, we you look at some of the things that some people do, you know, you think, well, drugs and alcohol or something that may have had a part in it or whatever, but when you don't even have those elements, you know, it is very, very important when you look at any group, you know, you have, you're going to have some talents that's going to be more than others, you know.
Right.
And one of the things that I always try to do is to be supportive of each of the guys. And as I recruited Lionel into the band, I literally watched him grow and encourage that growth. And sometimes you have people who are insecure and they, and then of course jealousy, greed, and all of these elements become a factor as well. And you know, you sometimes you get people starting to believe their own press, or and they stop giving and putting back into the communities to help, you know, you stay grounded, because that's very important as well. So when you put all these elements together, and then you start to isolate yourself, and you start to surround yourself with just yes people,
right?
Then it becomes a world that's not really the same world that everybody else is living in, you know.
Right.
And then of course, the next thing you know, you're listening to yes people telling you things that are really not the best for the group, and before you know it, 40 years pass by, and you haven't even never spoken to your lead singer, you know. And so as you know, I've tried to be a mediator and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And but after a while, you know, we're all grown, you know, so you can only speak. You can speak for children, but you can't speak forever for grown-ups, you know.
Without question.
But my whole thing is I still believe in the fact that there will be a reunion, you know, despite the fact that, being sued by the guys, and to know that I would never let any corporate structure come between me and the love that I have for those individuals.
I would be remiss if I said that it didn't bother me, that it didn't disturb me, because at the end of the day, you started out as friends.
That's right.
That led to brothers. Where did that dissipate? Somewhere along the line. But then, like you said, and what I've seen transpire in every group, you have different fractions break off. You have other people whispering into each individual's ear, telling them, you don't need this person. You're the group. You better off without them. I've seen it from the Delphonics to New Edition to the Temptations. It is just a lineage of where you've had supreme, super talented groups where each individual brought something to the table, and the group was torn apart. The group was torn apart, as you said, by other people getting in other people's ears. And it's very, very disheartening. Yeah, it really is.
It really is. And, you know, and the thing is, I grew up, and we all grew up saying, hey, you know what, this will never happen to us. You know? And so the strategy was, okay, you know, take sabbatical. It's like, you know, because, you know, everybody needs space. Right. So the strategy was, okay, yeah, we, you know, let's support Lionel and his solo effort. In fact, when we did the Kenny Rogers project, it was, you know, Lionel and I would just be supporting him. We collaborated on that project together, you know. Then he had the Endless Love project. So he called me and said, T-Mac, look, come on, let's collaborate on this. So I collaborated with him on the Endless Love project. And, of course, that was a part of the discussion that everybody had that we thought, you know, this is just everybody spreading out and spreading their wings. And the idea was to, at some point, come back together. And we used the Rolling Stones as a model. You know, Mick Jagger, yeah, you got to have a Mick Jagger if you're going to be a super group. You got to have a lead singer that's, you know, charismatic and that can do what the fans want to see done. And so if you don't have, you know, some sort of confidence and insecurities of, you know, and then, of course, you have, like I said, the whispers of people and all of this talking in your ears. And then the next thing you know, months turn into years, and then, you know, years turn into decades. You know what I'm saying? Like, but, you know, as I was speaking to Lionel the other day, you know, he said, because, I mean, he, Ronald and I, we performed in New Orleans, and we were trying to get everybody back in to do that performance, absolutely, you know. And, the three of us did do that, and then we went to New Zealand and down under, and, you know, 6,000 to 5,000 people showed up. So there's an appetite for a reunion of all the guys. And so we just, you know, just stay prayerful and hopeful that at some point we're not getting any older. Like you say, we're a little over 21.
Just a little bit. But you know what? I love that analogy when you brought up the Rolling Stones, because at the end of the day, regardless how great Mick Jagger was, he still needed his Keith Richards. He still needs
that's it.
His Ron Wood.
That's it.
Okay.
There you go.
So
there you go.
Come on. It's the foundation. It's the foundation.
Right.
And the funny thing is that I had an opportunity to have Walter on the show. This was about 3 years ago, and I spoke with him. And when I spoke with him, he could not definitively give me a reason why the Commodores couldn't get back together. He couldn't give me a reason. I asked him, I said, what is the problem? Well, I said, what is the problem? And he could not give me a reason. I'm saying, it has to be something about either egos or feelings getting hurt. I'm saying, wait a minute, you're brothers.
Yes.
You mean to tell me as brothers, as family, grown men, that you can't sit in a room and say, man, you know what? Maybe I said or did some things that were wrong. I want to apologize, because at the end of the day,
there you go. There you go, Tim Bear. That's right.
I
don't get it. I mean, like, Weave King and Lionel, for instance, they have, you know, it's been like maybe 4 years since they spoke, you know, whatever. But, you know, Lionel reaches out. Ronald and I, you know, we talk all the time. Walter, very talented, you know, you have your gift, but, you know, the truth of the matter is, you're not as a prolific songwriter as Lionel Richie. You know what I mean? And I mean, this is no big secret. This ain't, you know, it's not a, you know, and, but at the same time, hey, man, embrace the fact that when I recruited Walter, he replaced Andre Callahan, who volunteered for the Navy.
Right.
And when I got, you know, reached out to him, his thing was, hey, man, just pay me, you know, $500 a week and I'll be good. You know, no, we want to make you a part of the group. We want to make you a member of the group. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I'll talk about some of this in the book, you know, A Rock and Soul. Because I think the fans, we owe it to the fans, man. The fans have been so supportive of us over the years. Our music has survived the test of time, thanks to the fans. And so we owe that to them to come together and, if nothing else, have a proper farewell, you know, tour or something. You know what I mean? So that out of respect and out of the appreciation over the years that the fans, and everywhere I'm on my book tour now, we're going over to the Orient, to Dubai and Japan, and it's been incredible responses from all over the world. People really want to see the band, you know, do a reunion. And so I think if we can put enough of our, you know, how they, like the kids say, you know, you put enough peer pressure on them from the public, maybe they'll see the light and see, you know what, man? You know, you've been mad so long, you forgot what you're mad about. Like you said, you can't even answer the question, why haven't you got that gift?
You know what I mean? Yeah, had him on the show for about a good hour and a half, and I asked him, I mean, because everything that he was saying was so positive and so loving, and I'm saying, wait a minute, so much love and so much reverence for all the members in the group, what is the issue? Why can't you collectively get back together? You have so much great music that's left within you, and fans are starving to hear it. What is the issue? And he could not give me an answer or response on why. And when I took that and I had a conversation with some colleagues, I said, you know what? I shook my head. I said, it doesn't make any sense. I said, it's ego.
It doesn't.
I said,
it's ego.
I said, somebody is too proud to simply say, hey,
exactly,
I'm sorry. I did some things or said some things that were wrong, but at the end of the day, we brothers. Let's go out here, let's give these fans what they want, and on top of that, let's get paid. Let's get out here and make this money.
Thank you. I mean, there's hundreds of millions of dollars. You'll be amazed at the promoters and different buyers, man, who have said, look, you know, if you guys just do 10 shows around the world, you know, And the dollars was just astronomical. But, again, egos, pride, and stubbornness. And sad to say, you know, I look at... And I've talked to some of the people, you know, they're like, man, we went to the show, but, you know, we want to see the Commodores.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, well, you know. And I look at the only way we measure life is through the moments and how we spend those moments, you know. Then it becomes with whom you spend them with, you know. And I will never live with myself to know that I did not try, you know, as much as I could to reunite the guys. And like I said, that's where my. But in the meantime, you know, we have new music. We have our book. We're in the process of negotiating a movie for the based on the book, and a Broadway musical. So
wow, that's a lot in the can. That's a lot.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to bring everybody else along with it. So you know, and like I said, Lionel and Ron, we're on board. I mean, we've already performed, you know, together, and we talk all the time. It's just King and Orange, you know. Maybe one day they'll wake up.
I hope so, because right now, because during the 70s, as far as collectively as a group, to me, you didn't get an opportunity to really capitalize on the amount of money that you were able to generate if you had an opportunity to perform extensively outside the United States. And now, because you have a handful of record labels, just a handful, and you're independent contractors, that means you are controlling the dollars, because dollars do make sense. Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah.
You can go and you can go, like you said, places like Dubai, Japan, Australia, England, and kill it and do 10 shows and make a boatload of money, in the studio, make a greatest hits album, and
that's
put out some new music. And I mean, it's money there on the table.
And like I told, even I told Lionel, I said, you know, yeah, you're big, but coming back and doing a reunion will make you even bigger. Okay.
Well, look, I have my own feelings on that. I told Walter, I said, look, man, I said, what you're doing right now is cool. I said, but man, I said, to me, just like Earth, Wind, and Fire, why am I going to see Earth, Wind, and Fire if Maurice White isn't there? Why am I going to
there
see Commodores if Thomas and Lionel ain't there? It's just, it's not,
okay.
It's not the same.
It's not.
It's not the same.
Right.
It's like you said, I'm gonna cook you a steak. I'm gonna cook you a steak dinner, but you're gonna give me a potato, but there's no steak.
And don't think I'm not, you know, very transparent with Lionel. You know, like I told Lionel, I said, hey, look, you know, you can collaborate with everybody in the world, but until you collaborate back with the Commodores, your mission is incomplete. And,
he's already crossed over, but your fan base is here.
That's it. That's exactly right.
Your fan base is here.
That's right. And like I told him, I said, look, country album, this and that, but who got you initially out there?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, I don't have a problem, you know, calling all that stuff out, because not from an ego perspective, but from a factual standpoint, I recruited each one of them into the band. And so when I had to talk to your grandmother to convince her to allow you to get in the band, and, of course, to talk to your parents, I feel that there's when you look at some of the counseling and some of the mentoring that we have received from others, it's always good to look back in your own backyard and say, okay, yeah. I can still receive some wisdom from my backyard as well.
Without question. And I want to take it a step further. You just mentioned something that, I really want to take to another level. Being a mentor, being someone to provide that tutelage. What did Barry Gordy mean to you and collectively to the Commodores?
Barry Gordy was a very innovative entrepreneur who understood the importance of the assembly line. Had just gotten popular with Ford and some of the other corporations, and then you had some of the fast food chains were starting to evolve, and the importance of being to replicate a system that could generate revenue and of course produce hits on a consistent basis. And so he had writers and producers and arrangers, staff, individuals that were in-house that had obviously proven to be successful. And what we did was we observed that and said, okay, now how can we eat the meat from this and spit out the bones? And
Lord have mercy. Oh,
and so we shot him, actually, you know. We shot Motown, the whole family, you know, when we told him we like the meat here, but some of these bones here, we're going to have to spit them out. We're not, you know, going to go that route. And that was a bold thing to do back then, because even now, when an artist get a recording contract, most of them are so excited, just they go right in immediately and start recording or whatever, you know. And so our thing was we wanted to, A, write our own music, and B, we wanted to play our own music. And that was not being done. And so after 2 years of us sitting on the sideline, we had signed the contract, but we didn't activate it because we didn't spend a dime. Finally, Mr. Gordy said, you know what? You got to respect these guys, because who else has done such a thing? And even if they don't win, it'll be a write-off. Leave them alone. Let them go in there, do their thing. So from the outside looking in, Mr. Gordy began now to come and sort of take notes. And he was like, well, these guys are serious. They got a closed sessions. They don't have no foolishness going on in there. They, you know, let's anxiously find out what the music is going to sound like when they finish. And, of course, the first album was Machine Gun. And it was the first gold album in the history of Motown, which they had had gold singles prior to that, but they'd never had a gold album. And like you say, dollars do buy cents. You know?
There you go. Everybody had to take notice real quick and say, wait a minute.
Real quick.
We have a diamond right here in our possession.
That's right.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen things drastically change where at one point you had artist development, and now that's no longer existent.
That's right. That's right.
You find very few artists that take pride on being an artist as far as honing their skills, as far as being a writer, being a musician. And I'm going to tell you something right now, and I think that this is one of the travesties. I think that you are one of the most devastatingly gifted lead guitarists that I've ever seen.
And you have never met me personally.
You have never gotten. You're really for being that man. I mean, just man. Because family, I'm dating myself a little bit. It's all right. I'm dating myself a little bit. But I had an opportunity on three separate occasions to see the original Commodores, afros and everything, man. It was a beautiful experience. His brother I have on the line right now could play, excuse me, God, for using it, he could play his ass off. He could play. Man.
Well, you know what? That's very kind of you, man. I love, obviously, playing. I play every day, even now. I mean, I just before I called you, in fact, I was playing. I think there's music is an art that just keeps evolving. And, you know, as a musician, songwriter, producer, performer, you have to keep evolving. And I feel like I've gotten even much better since you've seen me. And, you know, we are constantly trying to strike up, being innovative and want to set a trajectory and to set new trends. And, you know, because that's I think the listeners, that was one of the things that was always intriguing, I think, about us, that you couldn't really pin down exactly what we were going to come out with, but you knew it was going to be quality, and you knew it was going to be different, and you knew it was going to have substance. And so sometimes you have to go internally inside and spend that time with yourself and not just settle for just good. You know, you want it to be great, you know. And so I think the audience deserved that. And in fact, we were starting our tours, and as we performed, we were in Switzerland, and of course some of our fans had driven from Germany to see me and in our group. And one of the guys, he was at the lobby for an hour and a half, and security, you know, was like, "Man, Mr. McCleary, there's somebody down there's been down in the lobby with a box down there, and he's been down there for an hour and a half waiting on you, and we're kind of concerned," and whatever. But anyway, come to find out, this gentleman had photographs and albums of every song that I had ever written. And, you know, he had the original autographs from all the guys from, you know, from the 70s when we were over there. And he was just a diehard fan, you know. And he says, "You know what? I got to tell you something. I drove from Germany to hear you, and when I saw you and your kids and how you reproduced the sound," he said, "it's amazing. It's obviously you had a lot to do with the signature sound." I said, "Well, you know, that's amazing that you would say that. I mean, but we were a group, and even though, you know, I taught a lot of the parts, you know, when you have taught the parts, you know the parts, obviously. It's like a coach that goes in and draws the plays, you know. You have a concept of what the players should be doing. And if it's the Boston Celtics or if it's the Clippers that you're coaching, you know, you have a concept of how to go in and try to create a culture that will have a certain standard, you know." And so I think, as Lionel and I were talking, I think some of the guys were there, but they weren't taking notes. And so some of them don't have a clue as to how, what it took and how we made it. You know what I mean?
Right.
They was just, they was just like, so when it's time to reproduce it, they can't, you know?
Can't do it. And do it. You know, one of the things I've always wanted to ask, I said, when I get you on, I got to ask you, that lead that you did on Easy, you ripped it apart. But I wanted to ask you, what guitar were you playing? Was it a Fender? Was it, I mean, what, Gibson, what were you playing at the time?
Yeah, man, I played a 335. I still have that guitar. It's a Gibson 335.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Man.
And man, I took it was about 4 hours just tweaking the tones on that before I, you know, actually got satisfied with it. And the thing that I was trying to do was, when you have lyrics like, "Why in the world would anybody put chains on me?" I paid my dues to make it.
Make it. Everybody wants me to be, but they want me to be.
What do they want me to be? You know, I'm not happy when I try to fake it.
Trying to fake it. All right, so I'm easy. All
right. That's why I'm easy. You know, that can't just be just an any old ballad, you know what I mean? Just a regular stylistic, so whatever kind of ballad, you know. It's got to have some other kind of elements in it, you know what I mean? And so we wanted to bring that kind of a heat to that, and that kind of a urgency, and that kind of intensity, you know. And to have Rolling Stone, you know, as a musician, you know, that was my first Rolling Stone write-up, you know, and the guy who interviewed me for the write-up, you know, he's like, "Man, he said, "You may not realize this," he says, "but, because you in the moment," he said, "but this will stand the test of time."
Without question. Without question. My goodness. One band, one sound. It's a beautiful thing. And to all those beautiful people that are tuning in and listening in live, first and foremost, I want you to make sure, let your fingers do the walking, head over to Amazon.com, pick up the new book, of course, from the legendary Mr. Thomas McCurry. Of course, the new book is called Rock and Soul. Pick it up. I have mine. It is great reading. It's fascinating. It's things that you never knew, not only about Thomas, but the Commodores and his journey. Lastly, I want to talk to you about his family. I know your family is so important to you, especially your lovely wife. What has it meant to you over the years to have that kind of level of love and support, a strong support system from your family? What has it meant to you?
Oh man, you're about to tear me up now. Yeah, man, I tell you, that is crucial, you know, to have unconditional love from a wife and your children who just adore you, and vice versa. It's so empowering that it helps you to fulfill the purpose and to pursue the passion, pursue it with passion. And it gives you this place that I like to call it a place where you can replenish yourself, you know, and just keep giving, because it's very important as a human and as an individual. You know, we all in society here, we have our own place and our own responsibilities, you know, to the human nature of what God has created us to do and to be. And a lot of times, because some of us don't have that oasis or that place where we can go and be replenished, we can't muscle up the energy and the fortitude to complete our missions in life. But because I have an incredible support system with my wife, Beryl, and my family and my children, I feel like every day I wake up, I can conquer the world, you know? And it also gives, it has given me the unselfish abilities to give of myself to nonprofit organizations. Like we raise money for adults that who, for whatever reason, cannot afford health care. We raise money for children who are suffering from lupus and arthritis. I didn't realize it was a disease that targeted children until I started raising money. And we help wounded soldiers. So without a support of my wife and my children, couldn't be involved in all of these activities and feel good about it. And they allow me to, when I'm at these places, to be there both heart, soul, and my mind. I'm not worried about anything else or, you know, concerned about, oh, this and that, and you have all of this fragmented stuff going on, and it keeps you whole, and so that you can be effective wherever you are. I mean, just like I am right now with you, I mean, my total being is with the teddy bear, you know what I mean? And so people that unfortunately that have not found that soulmate or that person who has been through the ups and the downs of life with them and literally are there for better or for worse, there's a prayer for them. And obviously, you know, I wish that everybody could find that person, because that is that's a powerful place. And of course, by her being a prayer warrior who loves the Lord and, you know, a serious lawyer who is incredibly accomplished in her own right, it gives a wholesome to us that it's just words can't, very difficult for words to describe it.
Absolutely. You know, it's a beautiful thing when you know that at the end of the day, you have someone that's going to keep you grounded. Someone that's going to love you unconditionally, because industry, this entertainment industry will turn you inside out, flip you upside down, and you don't know half the time that you're coming or going. And I mean,
that's right, man.
My goodness, Lord have mercy. Well, like I've always told you, this is definitely your home. And before I let you ease on down the road, I gotta ask you, can we expect any new music from you? Because you know, if you got some new music, we will definitely play it and debut it here first.
Yes, sir. In fact, I'm going to send you a new single called Do It.
Okay.
And I will, in fact, what I need you to do, if I don't already have it, I think I'll have to check with Margaret. I may have your email address and everything. But if I don't, when we finish, I would love to get that so that I'll send that to you immediately.
Okay. And as soon as we get it, like grandma's cookies, even if it's a little bit soft, as long as it's warm, We gonna play it here, man.
I'm playing you.
We got you.
Boy, look here. You know you hey, I took my notes out now. You know, every dollar has cents. You know, I'm writing all my little songs down. You know, the telephone specials. You know.
Brother, I just have one request from you. Next time that you have an opportunity to converse with Mr. Lionel Richie, can you please convey a message to him from the teddy bear? Come
yes,
on,
sir.
Brother. Come on.
Okay. That's right. Come on. That's right. Come on home now. That's right. I mean, that's right. That's right.
Come on.
Come on home. Man. You know, I think you sort of echoing a lot of the brothers and sisters out there, you know. It's okay to do all of that, but now come on home.
Come on home.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right.
And all the listeners out there, you can catch up with Thomas actually on Instagram. He's on Instagram, so be sure you follow him and make sure you get all the latest updates, his comings and goings, and also on Facebook. And I'll be waiting. Get that new hot chocolate, that new single from you. We can sit up here and debut it here first. Brother, again, this is your home. Whatever you need, please do not hesitate.
Oh,
let us all be got you, okay?
Yes, sir. I love you very much, and thanks for all that you have done and all that you do. You know, without your support and, you know, the networking, hey, man, the Commodores wouldn't be the legends that we are. And thank you.
Oh, it's
thank
my
you.
Pleasure. We all have a calling. Sing
that's
on
right.
down the line about
half
a mile.
Half a mile. Talk to you all day, man. You, listen, I wanna kick this back at you too.
Okay.
Anything that I could do for you and your family, man, and you know, your show or whatever, and then you personally, whatever it is.
You know
got
what?
My information, reach out
I
to
require,
me.
The only thing I just like I said, for me, I just want collectively for you brothers to get back together and get in that
yes,
studio
sir.
And make some music
yes,
and get out there and tour and make this money. Let everybody see what a real group, a real talented group sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, sir.
That's right. That's all I want.
All
I desire.
Well, I'm working on it. Been working on it for 30 years. I'm not going to stop. And like I say, I have to be positive and think that I would love to think that we're closer than we've been. So I'm going to just keep doing what I know to do to make that happen. And trust me, if whatever I have to do, sacrificially or whatever, you know, there's no egos here. I just want to see it happen. See everybody come back together, man, and let's go out there and bless the fans again.
There you go. Much continued success and much love to you, Brother Thomas.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Same to you. Let's make sure I have your information. Email-wise and stuff, and
okay.
I'll get this to you right away.
I'll make sure my program director, her name is Tammy, I'll make sure she takes care of the situation, because I definitely want to connect with you, because we want to definitely, whatever music that you have, we definitely want to debut it here. And also, too, if you can create a radio drop to promote whatever you're doing, we'll also make sure that's being played continuously. Like I said, we have the means and everything, the necessities to make things happen. We want to make sure that our artists are represented in the way they should be represented, man. It's, you know,
radio, that's awesome, man.
Radio has changed dramatically. It's not the way it used to be where you can go to the radio station and play an album and people can listen. Now everything is about gossip. But see, I've seen the need and I'm here to fulfill this need. I'm taking it back the way it used to be when music meant something.
I love it.
Like Yul Brynner said, so it is written, so it shall be done. Lord.
Dr. Teddy. Man, you the man. You are the man. I can tell you have a passion for what you do, man.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I love
know
it.
You do.
I
it
love it. Music meant everything. It was nothing for me to sit up and go to the record store and pick up a Commodore 45, pick up a 33.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Sometimes you just zoom. You needed to zoom and just get out. Fresh and free, baby. You had to get
yes, sir.
Zoom, had to get out.
Yeah, brother, right.
I will see you on the other side again. You take care of that lovely family of yours, okay?
Yes, sir. And likewise to you, man. God bless you and your family.
All right. God bless. The legendary
Mr.
Thomas McClary from the Commodores here in the zone of LOTL Radio. Lord have mercy. It's time for the teddy bear to take a little quick 2-2. Got to pay some bills. But, you know, as I've always said, the teddy bear is very easy. Easy like a Sunday morning. Commodores, you're in the